Welcome to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I am Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this episode are Mike and Matt. Mike, how you doing?
Doing well. The Rays just made three picks, so I'm pretty excited about the draft for this year, even though, I mean, what, like 3% of the population is probably watching it at this point, but I'm
less
excited.
Than that. Much less than that. 3% of the baseball population.
Yeah.
Matt, how are you? Are you?
I'm pumped, man.
Are you fully Nolan clothed? Norman. Are you, doing your thing? I don't know, like, how seriously you take all this stuff.
I probably get too invested in the draft, but it's one of the things I like doing. So it's always a good thing when your team gets one of the guys you targeted and didn't think you had a chance at. I thought Nolan Gorman was going to be a top 10 pick, and the Cardinals got him at 19. So I'm pretty excited about that.
All right.
But yeah.
Okay. Well, joining us today is a special guest. It's our dear friend, Mike Gianella from Baseball Prospectus. Mike, welcome to the show.
Hey, it's more like welcome back, although I know it's been a while. It's been at least a year, right?
Yeah, it feels like it's been too long.
Yeah, well, you're much bigger light since I was on last time. Like you're all over the place. Like you're writing or podcasting for at least like a dozen sites now, right?
It sure as hell feels like it. I don't get paid like it, but it sure as hell feels like it.
You tweeted it out the other day, and I'm pretty sure I counted at least like 12 different places you've got a credit with.
Yeah,
although
it's been
that includes CGFBI, which that's just like a bunch of leagues you're running.
Yeah, there's no real benefit to that other than people going like, man, thanks for putting this together. It's been a lot of fun. It's been it was fun to hang out with you at Tout Wars the last 2 years, and it's been a nice rise. But it's good to have you back on the show. Why don't you tell people where you reached on social media, and then tell people a little bit about yourself in case they've joined this podcast in the last year.
So on Twitter, I'm Mike Gianella, G-I-A-N-E-L-L-A. That's all one word. There's no underline or anything like that. I write for Baseball Prospectus. I'm the senior fantasy writer. I've been writing there since, I can't believe how long it's been now, 2013. Before that, I had a blog. It was just kind of called Roto Think Tank, which I had since 2007. And I've been playing in Tout Wars since 2010 and Labor since 2014. And, you know, it's been great. I mean, writing for Baseball Prospectus, it's kind of one of those things. Like, I know that the site's been around a long time and there have been so many iterations, but like, it's one of those things you still kind of say to yourself, like, wow, I'm writing for Baseball Prospectus. Like, it's still a big deal.
It is. And we're super grateful whenever you can carve out some time to come on. You're one of my favorite people in the industry and one of my favorite Twitter follows. So definitely got to follow Mike on Twitter at Mike Gianella.
Yeah, I follow all you guys too. Although I think Justin, you're on more than Mike and Matt, especially Mike. I don't see you on there very much.
I used to be like on there all the time, and then I started working like 70 hours a week, so I haven't found a lot of time to get on there.
Yeah. And I've been told that too much. So
yeah, you can tell like I'm in the office like Tuesdays and Fridays, and you can kind of tell because it's like 2 days during the day where like I might tweet one or two things, but it isn't very frequent.
Yeah, I'm on Twitter all day long and all night long because I don't sleep. So you can reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason FWFB. You can reach Matt on Twitter at MDTompFWB, and Mike Warner at Mike Warner FWFB. In case you're wondering.
Here's a funny thing, though. So I've fallen into this like really weird sleep schedule, and this pod's gonna mess me up. So, like, we're recording right now at about 10:30, a little before that Eastern. And lately, I've been like an old man. I've been falling asleep at like 9 p.m. Eastern, getting up at like 4 a.m. So I'm getting like 7 hours of sleep, but like I get up this weird time, and I'll go onto Twitter at like 4:30 or so, and I'll expect to see people from West Coast Twitter, and I usually don't.
Well, I mean,
I see Danny, who's I forget his full handle, who
at
I think
Giants
is in
Bond.
Your, yeah, who's in your Bay Area league. I see him and there's a couple other people, but yeah, I almost never see you at that time, Justin. I don't know why. Maybe that's like when you actually are sleeping.
No, that's usually when I'm writing. So
okay,
I'll jump on like once an hour or something like that to kind of blow off steam when I'm taking a smoke break or something like that. Though, going to be trying to quitting smoking again this week. We'll see how that goes.
Well, good luck. Yeah, we've talked about this before. I mean, I did that like before my oldest was born, which at this point was like 11 years ago. So yeah, it's that's tough. It's I don't even say about that. I'm not a judgmental ex-smoker either. Like if you can quit, great. If you can't, I completely understand.
Yeah, no, I got it because like I can't exercise if I'm smoking, and I need to be able to tie my shoes without running out of breath.
Yeah, I remember going to the gym like when you're smoking and you feel so stupid. It's like, first of all, you smell like smoke and people like look at you like you're stupid. But then like you try like using the machines and you're like, ugh.
For me, it's really embarrassing when I have to go out in the middle of my workout for a cigarette.
I was never that bad. But I remember racing through the workout so I'd get outside to have one. That I remember doing. Like, oh, if I do the exercises faster and I finish in half an hour instead of 45 minutes or whatever it was, I'll be outside.
Wait, you're a runner, aren't you, Mike? So I'm sure like running got a lot easier for you after you stopped smoking.
Like, well, the funny thing about that is I decided to run a marathon, and that was one of the impetuses besides my older daughter being born to quit. And this was like, I think 11 months or a year before I did it. I just kind of said offhandedly one day, I'm going to run a marathon. And like, people were like, yeah, whatever, dude. Like, you know, you're sitting here having a butt, like on the couch, like having a beer with me. And then I just got all dedicated. And like, I think about halfway through, be like, holy crap, like he's actually going to do this. And I did finish. I mean, it took me like almost 5 hours to finish, but I did finish. And it was just one of those things where it was like, it was such a great impetus for me to quit. And I think that's what comes down to for a lot of people. You kind of need some sort of,
you motivation. Know, something.
Yeah.
Yeah, I stopped running when people stopped chasing me, so.
I've heard that one before.
It's very true. Let's talk some fantasy baseball and move on to some more interesting things than the fact that I struggle with quitting smoking. Let's start with Matt Kemp, who I believe when I wrote up the rundown for this episode was leading the National League in batting average. I don't know if he's still doing that, but he is hitting, coming into tonight, 344, 376, 572. Has 9 home runs in a kind of depleted Dodgers lineup. I forgot to mention, for those who are newer to the podcast, when we have Mike Gianella on and Warner on, we have to distinguish between the two. And so we call Gianella Good Mike, and Warner Evil Mike. So
this works out very well for me.
So Good Mike.
I completely forgot about this. Like, completely.
That's how long it's been. Yeah, because it's like the third or fourth time it's on. I think like the second and third time you remember and you're like, oh man,
this is my favorite part of the year.
I'm not evil. I'm not evil. You know. I mean, I'm
agreed. Have you, this.
Have you had Mike Podhurst on before?
We have. Yes.
Okay. Have you? Do you do this with him too?
No, we called him Pod.
Okay.
So, but this is way more fun to call Mike Evil Mike. So, Good Mike, what are your thoughts on Matt Kemp?
Well, you know, I noticed that. I saw somebody had blasted out the other day that Kemp, and I think it was Max Muncy and Yasmani Grandal, lead the Dodgers with 9 home runs apiece, which that was the first thing that jumped out, because you're like, wow, like, I know that not every team has a big home run hitter, but in this era, for the no one to be on pace to clear 30, that really stood out to me. You know, the thing about Kemp, a lot of what it came down to with him for a while was health. But then, you know, when you look at Kemp and you kind of look at his profile going back to 2014, he's always been, you know, outside of last year, he's always been kind of healthy. Like, he's played 150 games. He's, you know, hit 23 or more home runs. He drove in, you know, over 100, like in 2 of those 3 healthy years. So The only thing that's really unusual to me about him is the batting average. And, you know, I know, you know, we want to avoid, you know, just leaning on BABIP. You know, we're in the era now of StatCast and launch angle and, you know, batted, you know, how hard the ball's being hit. But I do think that some of this is obviously, you know, fueled by some luck on balls in play. So what you're probably looking at with Kemp is you're probably looking at a true 280, 290 hitter who is going to hit like 25 to 30 home runs seasonally. That's really good. You know, it doesn't make him a stud in this era that we're in, but it does make him a really valuable hitter. And I think his age and the fact that he had an off year last year for the Braves and missed some time and was essentially a kind of a salary dump by Atlanta just made people forget about him, including me. And he really shouldn't have been. He was probably, even coming into the year, like a back end 15 team mix sort of guy, and was really being looked at more as an NL only.
Evil Mike, what are your thoughts?
I mean, the first thing I think of with Matt Kemp, and again, you know, I like women, but I mean, his eyes are astronomically off the charts awesome. So very, very good, like, to gaze into his eyes. I feel good about it.
Nice,
I mean,
throwback to the first season of Friends of Hitting.
Yeah,
Defense.
First ever season a couple years ago. But, I mean, I like Kemp. He did this kind of in the first half last year, though. He had 12 home runs and hit 305 and 266 at-bats in the first half. And in the second half, he ended up tailing off to his 233 batting average, 7 home runs. I can't remember or recall if it was injury-plagued or not, but he has been rather consistent, you know, according to good Mike's point there. I mean, I think some of this is bad of it fueled, but also when you look at his stat cast, if I could talk metrics, his stuff's going up. You know, launch angle is up almost 7 degrees from last year. He has a better barrel percentage. Exit velocity is up a couple miles. I mean, like, he's hitting the ball harder. And, you know, I think the power is legitimate enough, even though it's a little bit down compared to last season in the first half. So I agree with Mike. I think he's going to be, you know, when it's all said and done, barring health, a 25 home run bat. He's probably going to hit when his bottom line is probably going to sit in the 300 area. But the rest of the year, 280, 290 batting average. I do worry about the first half, second half splits last year and the health. But, I mean, you paid outside the top 300 picks for him. So, really, what you're getting right now is a solid contributor and somebody that probably can be like an outfield 3 or 4 for you the rest of the year.
Matt, what are your thoughts on Matt Kemp?
It's one of those can't predict ball moments for me. I mean, you look at Kemp and everybody kind of wrote him off, and, you know, rightly so. The bad body and everything like that coming from Atlanta, lack of motivation. Comes to L.A. and looks like vintage Matt Kemp here for a minute. Yeah, and I think a lot of it is BABIP fueled, like some of you guys already mentioned. But there's a lot to like in the profile. He's still hitting the ball hard. And it's crazy. You know, the Dodgers, of all the injuries they've had, they haven't really, you know, it's not, one of them is not Matt Kemp. And he's kind of a reason why they're still, you know, where they are right now. And it's a credit to their depth. And, you know, I figured guys like Andrew Toles and Jock Peterson would play a more significant role as far as, you know, in left field than Kemp would this year, and I've been proven to be wrong so far. We traded Kemp in RDI, didn't we, or in Dynasty Guru? What did we trade him in, Justin? We had him in a league preseason.
Yeah, I think we traded him in TDGX or whatever the acronym is.
Yeah, so we just wanted to get something for him, and well, I mean, yeah. I still regret it because, you know, who could have predicted this happening? And it's, he's always kind of in. You always feel like an injury is right around the corner, even though you probably shouldn't, just because, I mean, 3 out of the last 4 years, he's played over 150 games. Obviously, last year, he only played 115, but he's, you know, well on his way this year to another strong games played campaign anyways, and that does mean a lot in fantasy. If he gets healthy, he can still hit, so it's nice to see a little resurgence here.
Yeah, the only problem is, like, I have no faith that he can stay healthy the rest of the way.
Right, arthritic hips, right?
Yeah, just, like, that's something that I deal with. And I mean, I'm obviously not a premium athlete like Matt Kemp, but it's just not something that can be tolerated, you know, day in, day out, especially when you are playing a sport full time. So, and I mean, there are some slight changes to his profile, but, you know, he's swinging strike rate is still about the same. He's still swinging outside the zone about the same. He's got a huge BABIP. And he is getting the ball in the air more. And then his hard contact percentage is just through the roof. I just don't know how sustainable a 48% hard contact percentage is for a guy with about a 36% career mark. So, I mean, there's obviously going to be some regression, but I don't see why he couldn't hit 280, 290 rest of the way. And he's already banked, you know, these hits, you know, towards his average for the year. So if he finishes around, you know, 300, 310, something like that, it won't surprise me. The question becomes, and I'll throw it to Good Mike first, can you sell Matt Kemp right now?
Probably not, just because, you know, everybody's thinking the same thing. I don't think anybody's looking at this iteration of Kemp. You know, it's really weird because we all just said, like, or a lot of us just said, you know, he's pretty solid. You look at his 2014 to 2016, and they're similar numbers except the average. But I feel like almost everybody's going to have the same kind of feeling about him. You know, if anything, and this might sound weird, you might be able to buy a little bit low on him if you can find someone who has him, who's looking at him and kind of looking, I think it was at Matt's points, which is like, you know, he's got the reputation of the thick body. He's going to get hurt. That's probably what I might be looking to. I might be looking to, like, you know, go to the guy who has him and be like, hey, you know, like, what are you, and try to maybe sneak in like a third tier or maybe a fourth tier starting pitcher in a deep mix for him. Because I feel like there's that expectation he's just going to fall off the cliff. And if you can trade for him at that expectation or slightly higher, that's probably the play with Kemp. As opposed to if you have him, I think you just have to kind of ride him and, you know, sort of hope that he doesn't collapse or get hurt.
Matt and Mike, do you agree?
Yeah, I think that's the strategy to do.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, his upside is capped at this point, and everybody in fantasy is looking for more and more upside every year as some of these young guys come up and start to just rattle off 30 home run seasons. So I think that, yeah, buying opportunity for Kemp is probably something you could do.
I'm trying to see what we got for him. TDGX.
I think he was thrown in a bigger trade.
Yeah. Let's see. Maybe
it's definitely more of a deep league thing. Like, you wouldn't try and get him in like a 12-team mixer, but if you're in like an NL format, NL only format, or like a 20-team league where you just need some type of production from a spot that you're getting nothing from, and you have a piece that you think might fall off a little bit in the second half, like, you know, you could probably get a deal done as getting Kemp as like an added piece or something. You know, but I definitely think the narrative is that he's just not somebody that's durable and somebody that's not going to be presenting a lot of upside, and somebody that is steady, like an Andrew Adam Jones or, you know, Matt Kemp type is valuable, especially in deeper leagues.
Maybe he's back with Rihanna. Vintage.
I think, isn't she with Eminem or something like that?
I have no idea.
I'm not cool. I shouldn't try to pretend to be. He was part of our Josh Hader and Nick Bavetta trade for Adonis Medina, Jesus Luzardo, and Jalian Ortiz.
So. Don't regret it. Luzardo's a monster.
Yeah, I don't regret it either. Speaking of a monster, Andrew Benintendi has been an absolute monster this year, hitting .296, .381, .537, 9 home runs, 9 stolen bases. Evil Mike, what are your thoughts so far on Benintendi? Where does he kind of rank for you in terms of outfielders right now?
I mean, putting a ranking on him, I'd say he's a second outfielder in shallow format. So what is that, like a top, you know, 20 guy or so? It's amazing the difference that it makes when you have somebody like JD Martinez in the lineup, and as opposed to, you know, Hanley Ramirez was the mainstay in the middle of the lineup last year in 2017. And I mean, he still put up 84 runs and 90 RBIs. Right now, he's on pace to go almost over 100 in both of those categories. Really solid, you know, 2020 in terms of stolen bases and home runs. There's not a lot different. He's making a little bit less hard contact this year, but I'm not really worried about that. His underlying power metrics, you know, the expected power index metric that Baseball HQ uses that, I love, is down compared to last year. But I'm not really worried about the power, nor do you have him on a team for power per se anyways. I think that the rest of the year he's going to hit another, you know, 10 to 15 home runs. And there's not a lot to really glean from this other than I think his counting stats are going to remain one of the tops in the league just based on the fact that they have JD Martinez just crushing it. And, you know, when David Ortiz was in the lineup a couple years ago with Mookie Betts, it really made the lineup kind of hum and along. And I think Andrew Benintendi is going to be a benefactor of having somebody like JD in the lineup and Mookie Betts when he comes back, etc. So nothing bad to say. I think he's a stud and, you know, move on.
Good, Mike. Where are you at on Benintendi?
Yeah, I'm about there. I might be even a little bit higher than Evil Mike is. I'd say maybe top 15 for me. A lot of the same things. You know, a memory I have of Benintendi, I saw him and Yon Moncada at Double A Trenton, which is right by where I live. That goes back to 2015. And you know, the funny thing about those two players, Moncada was the guy. You know, when you see a guy like him in the minors, you're like, oh my gosh, he's going to be a stud, like a future star. Like, he's really fast. You can see he has the tools. Whereas Benintendi was a player you watch and you're like, yeah, he's solid and he clearly stands out from these players, you know, as a future major leaguer. But he doesn't look like a star. He looks more like an everyday guy. But the nice thing about him in fantasy is he just fills up that box score. Like, he was 20-20 last year. This year he's on pace for like kind of 25-25. And to me, that's an underrated component about Benintendi's value, is he's going to get you those steals. In today's game, I'd probably rather have a guy like who's going to hit me like 280, 290 and go 20-20 or 25-25 than a guy who's going to hit 40, 45 home runs and hit 260 or 270. So that's a sneaky part of Benintendi's value. And the hit tool has always been really up there with him. He's just a legit hitter. I do agree with Evil Mike's point about the lineup. That certainly helps. So I'm really comfortable with Benintendi in any format as, you know, either an outfield, like kind of a lower-end outfield one or a top-tier outfield two.
Matt, what are what's your take on Benintendi?
I'm going to echo a lot of what Mike and Mike already said. Terrible ESPN talk show, by the way. If we remember, you know, we were talking about the draft, and Benintendi was the seventh overall pick in the 2015 draft by the Red Sox. And, you know, Mike and I do the prospect pod out here, and Benintendi was actually my number one prospect over Moncada last year. And it was for a lot of the reasons that Mike Gianello touched on already. You know, you talked to Moncada. Those two players will always be linked for me. Moncada is always the flashier guy, but Benintendi is kind of that steady Eddie guy that you just plug and play, and he exceeded my expectations a little bit quicker than I thought. I mean, 2020 in his first full season is, you know, without, you know, Aaron Judge around, how much more rookie of the year talk and how much more talk is Benintendi getting in general? You know what I mean? He's very overshadowed by Judge, and he's putting up a spectacular season this year. The plate skills are fantastic. A little bit of bad but luck, I think, right now, especially against righties. He's hitting .322 against right-handed pitching this year. I think ultimately that's going to come down a little bit. So, you know, I think you could expect him to lose 20 points or so off the batting average, if that, if, you know, because it's get back to the standard level. But the counting stats are, he's on pace for a 25-25 season, and that's fantastic. I think, like Mike said, Mike Warner said, a lot of it comes with J.D. Martinez in the lineup behind him. Great ballpark for a hitter like this. Benintendi hits a lot of line drives. He uses all fields. That Green Monster is his best friend out there, and he's been an outstanding player. And I think next year he's probably going to be a second-round pick.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's your mini discount.
For the most part, he was this year. I mean,
was he this year? Okay.
Late second, early third.
He'll probably be early second now, so your small discount is over. He's been better than advertised.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a whole lot to add. You guys pretty much covered it for the most part. I mean, the only thing I'll say is, you know, I was probably too low on him coming into the season. You know, he's just one of those guys that doesn't have the standout fantasy tool, except for, you know, I think we all maybe in fantasy at points kind of discount hit tool. And he does have, you know, a pretty close to elite hit tool. And, you know, I probably should have taken that more into account, because, I mean, this is a guy that is probably going to hit .290 this year with 23 home runs, 23 stolen bases. And that's extremely valuable. And usually the kind of guys that I like, because he's going to fill up every box in your roto categories. All right, let's move on to a guy that isn't necessarily a superstar, like Benintendi, but he is playing very well, and he's playing more and more, and that's Harrison Bader of the St. Louis Cardinals. And when we talk about mediocre talents on the St. Louis Cardinals, we always throw it to Matt first. So, Matt, what are your thoughts on Harrison Bader so far?
As self-appointed president of the Harrison Bader fan club when he was a prospect, I love what he's doing. My issue with this is going to be playing time. It is possible to rotate, you know, him and Fowler around with and get enough at bats for everybody. But I was listening to an interview with John Mozeliak on SiriusXM with Craig Mish, and he said, basically, in not so many words, contracts be damned. We're in the business of winning. We're going to put the best lineup on the field. The other guy in charge over there, who will be nameless,
the true evil said, Mike.
Yeah, the true.
He decided. He came out and responded to that in a little interview, kind of saying that Harrison Bader has done everything he deserves. Everything he could ask for on the baseball field and deserves to play every day, but he's not going to. So that was the quote. And it's kind of shitty because Bader has been great. He's a perfect DFS play against lefties, by the way. He destroys lefties for his brief major league career. Did it in the minor leagues. Righties kind of leave him a little susceptible to the slider away in the dirt. He has that ambush profile. He'll jump on a fastball early in the count. If he gets it, he's going to hit it. Surprisingly, he's been the best defensive center fielder in the game so far this year. It's very early. If you buy the StatCast metrics, he's been the best center field defender, which, again, you think he should play more, but, you know, whatever. I love Bader. A little bit too much swing and a miss in the profile, I think, to have long-term success, at least this early on in his career. But I do think he can be an above-average regular as soon as probably a year from now, but I just don't know if the playing time is going to be there. But I love Bader. He's a good combo meal guy, like I said, in DFS, power and steals. I think he's got 5-5. Five homers and 6 stolen bases in 45 games, only 100 at-bats. So that's a very, very productive player in the brief time he's been out there. So I like Bader a lot. He's kind of squeezing guys like Tyler O'Neill down into the minor leagues because there's not enough playing time for 4 guys. Why would you call up another one? But he's been really, really great and needs to play every day against lefties, at least.
Good, Mike. What are your thoughts on Harrison Bader?
I mean, I agree with a lot of that. And, you know, with Bader, I kind of have a tough time reconciling the scouting profile with what I've seen on the field. You know, to Matt's point, like, the numbers have been great. Like, and it's really difficult to argue against what he's done so far. And, you know, I'm looking at the BP metrics and, you know, defensively, they support his defense as well, like, and say it's legitimate. And, you know, it's a small sample and small sample defensive metrics. You have to kind of be careful. But, yeah, he just looks like somebody who, between his glove and everything else, you know, should at least be platooning. You know, the big concern with him from a scouting perspective in the minors, and I know, Matt, you alluded to this, it was against righties. It was, you know, some weaknesses there, some pitch recognition. And that's my only concern with Bader. I do wonder if at some point with prolonged exposure, if major league pitchers are going to eventually get to him. But we don't know. You know, we've seen players like this where people have said that, and, you know, they've just proven them wrong and they've exceeded, you know, what they've done. You know, sometimes I think what we forget is the most important thing with a player like this, what they've done in the majors, particularly when you have about this amount of sample that we're looking at, which I'd say between 100 and 150 plate appearances, it's legitimate enough, meaning that, yeah, Bader could slump, but you have to kind of stop looking at the scouting. You have to stop looking at that kind of, you know, those kind of elements and say, well, you know what? It's certainly possible that Harrison Bader could be like a 20-25 guy, and maybe the average won't be as good as it is now. Maybe he's a 250 hitter, but that plays in a lot of formats. And even if he isn't, you know, he's going to sit against some tougher righties, I still think there's enough play there if he can find the playing time. But as we know, that, you know, in that outfield and on that team, particularly with Matheny, that is an if.
Evil Mike. He's Evil Mike, who we're going to talk to next about Harrison Bader. So, Evil Mike.
Yeah, he's not here right now. I don't know where Evil Mike is. I guess he's somewhere in some clubhouse somewhere. But I like Bader a lot. You know, Matt kind of referenced us doing the prospect shows, and we've always been really, really high on Bader. I'm not really high on his school. You know, University of Florida can go screw themselves. I hate him. But I do think Bader, the playing time is the obvious issue here. I mean, I do think that Fowler, based on his, you know, past injury history, Ozuna having kind of ups and downs in his career, and then Pham obviously having injury history as well, there should be, you know, enough plate appearances or at bats to go around for him. I mean, the fact that he has 100 right now with a mix of some injuries and stuff, it really presents a nice opportunity for him. You know, in fantasy, we care about, you know, just what type of categories a player can fill for us. And even if he's not going to be an asset in batting average, which I think is clear as of now, you know, I mean, right now he's a 270 hitter, you know, based on the context from his minor league numbers, we can expect, yeah, you know, he struggles a bit against righties with, you know, striking out and such. So even if he is a 250 hitter, we don't need him for batting average. We need him for, you know, some pop and some stolen bases. And he's proven at the major league level that he can do that. I'd say over the course of a full season, if he was given full time at bats, that he could be a 2020 candidate. And the rest of the year this season, I would say, you know, if he gets another 250 at bats ish, we could expect another, especially double digit home runs, but probably another, you know, 10 to 15 steals as well. And that's, I think, really valuable if he's given that time. So I would gamble on it. If he's available in some shallower format of yours or even a deeper one, I would definitely try and just gamble and see whether, I mean, he's played the last, what, 6 or 7 games for them in a row. Yep. So 5 of the last 6 days. So, I mean, there's no problem with somebody that's going to be starting, you know, 5 of 7 days a week or 5 or 6 of 7 days a week. I like it. So I would take the gamble and see what happens.
I want to add something really quickly. The Cardinals are utilizing Bader, too, as he's a pinch runner late in games if he's not starting. That's why you're seeing a lot of games played. They're using him as a pinch runner, which is obviously good for his stolen base attempts because he's one of the few guys on that team with the green light. And as you can tell, in 6 stolen bases in 45 games, he's taking advantage of it. And to compound on Good Mike's point on 2025 upside, Bader repeated AAA in 2017. He was up in 2016 for a cup of coffee in AAA, and he didn't fare very well. Repeated AAA in 2017, in 120 games, roughly, he went 20-15 homers and stolen bases. And then, you know, 2017, he came up to the majors and didn't fare well. Now 2018, he's kind of, you know, he's repeating the major leagues, I guess you could say, and his rate stats, as far as plate discipline and everything like that, and plate skills, I should say, are identical to his 2017 season in AAA. So maybe it's kind of he's a slow starter, getting accustomed to the league, and it's been great so far.
Yeah, he's making contact, making more contact than in his brief major league stay last year. You know, the thing about Bader for me is I'd feel more comfortable picking him up in a shallower format, like Evil Mike said, if I had daily moves. He's going to be a frustrating guy, I think, at times in a weekly moves league, because there are going to be times in which he gets sat, you know, multiple days in a row. You're missing out on those stats. But in your daily moves leagues, and like Matt mentioned earlier, in DFS against left-handed pitching, he is, you know, usually a fairly cheap stud. So those are the kind of places I'm looking to target with him. I just don't trust the Cardinals as an organization with Mike Matheny kind of at the helm of the lineup card to really be super invested in a Harrison Bader. You know, just we saw it with Tommy Pham. We saw it with other guys through the Cardinals system that he can kind of just screw with the lineup, and all of a sudden the most talented guys are the ones sitting on the bench. So I kind of try to stay away from the less established guys in the Cardinals organization. All right, let's talk about Gleyber Torres, because we talked about him when he first came up, and Mike, Evil Mike and Matt and myself were all pretty much on board, and we weren't super jazzed about Gleyber Torres from a fantasy perspective. Well, he's come up and kind of shoved that in our face. I'm sure he listens to the mm-hmm. podcast. Thanks, Gleyber, for downloading and listening, because we obviously inspired him to a 317, 376, 583 triple slash, 9 home runs, which is
10 insane. Now.
Oh, 10 home runs 10 now. That's right. He hit one earlier today, and 2 stolen bases. He's just been fantastic. So I'll start with you, Evil Mike, and I'll let you kind of discuss whether or not you've come around on Gleyber Torres as a fantasy product, or if you are holding pat.
Well, at some point, I'm not going to say that I was wrong about being a little bit passive on him when he first came up, but, you know, 10 home runs and a 300 batting average later, it's really tough for me to just ignore that in a couple months stint. I would say that you have to continue to ride it out. There's no way anybody's going to be selling him at any point, and I just don't see any scenario where you're going to be able to get him at a cheap cost either. I, you know, me personally, I still don't think that this is going to last. I think he's going to end up hitting, you know, for the rest of the season, somewhere around 270 ish, and probably another 10 to 12 home runs, which is solid. Right now, it's kind of unexplainable how he's doing all this. The StatCast data isn't in love with his power metrics. Baseball HQ has a power metric that has kind of, you know, increased recently over the last, you know, week or so. But before that was really kind of league average with him on that. His contact profile isn't that great either. I just think at some point this has to catch up to him a little bit, and he's got to hit some sort of a wall. But for right now, like, he's really crushing it, and I'm not going to eat my words. But over the last, you know, month and a half or so, he certainly has proven my stance on him wrong from the beginning of the year. So go with that.
Good, Mike. What are your thoughts on Gleyber Torres?
Well, you know, it's funny, Justin. I heard you and Paul Sporer talking about him on Sleeper and the Bust, and you guys both were echoing those sentiments where you liked him as a real life player, but in fantasy you weren't even down on him, but you were like, yeah, I don't see the power being there. Or I think Paul said that more than you did. And you know, my thing about Torres, and this isn't a knock on what any of you guys thought about him, and I've done this before. I made this mistake with Ozzy Albies, who I was wrong on this year. Minor league talent tends to rise more quickly, and we've seen this the last couple of years, but we still keep kind of pushing back on it. And you know, some of it is the fact that the ball's different, and that changes things for hitters. You know, some of it is they're playing in better parks or a better environment. They've got better nutrition. They're on a better schedule. They're living a more comfortable lifestyle, quite honestly. All those factors kind of play in. And, you know, Torres, you add to the fact that he's playing half his games in Yankee Stadium, which plays like a bandbox, and has turned Didi Gregorius into a power hitter as well. It really shouldn't be that surprising. I mean, obviously what he's done is surprising, but it shouldn't be surprising it was going to hit for some power. Right? I think people were looking at his minor league numbers and going, yeah, you know, I see a 10 to 15 seasonal home run guy here, and we probably should have seen 20 to 25. So I do agree with the point that he could be the rest of the way like a 12, 14 home run hitter. He could fade a little bit. But the flip side of that is if he finishes with 25 to 30 home runs just because he's at 10 already, and just because he is going to play the rest of the season, barring injury, and he's going to start, you know, if you tell me he's going to finish with 15 home runs the rest of the way and get to 25, would that be a big surprise? Like, it wouldn't really be a surprise for me. So I know what the metrics say. I know that StatCast and some of the other metrics are not in love with him as a hitter. This is a case for me where I'm going to go with the talent. And even if he swoons a little bit, you know, and has a slump, which he will, the overall numbers are still going to support a really good player. As far as trading him or buying him, I think the only play with trading him is if you're in a keeper or dynasty and you can really get someone on the line to like give you like two or three top tier players because they're buying into him as like a 30 to 35 home run stud with the 300 average. Otherwise, you just either hold or, you know, you don't buy at what he's doing right now.
Matt, what are your thoughts on Torres?
Not much has changed, man. Justin, you hit this when you were talking about Benintendi, and this has kind of changed how I evaluate prospects a little bit myself. I started to do it a little bit last year. You got to value the hit tool so much more, and that's the best tool Torres has from a fantasy standpoint is the hit tool and the ability to just put the barrel on the ball. And that's what you're seeing right now. I mean, obviously, his 25% homer to fly ball rate is going to come down. So that's responsible for a lot of the power spike. But it's not conceivable that he ends up with 25 home runs or so just because, like Mike said, he's going to be up all year. And as far as, you know, trading for him in a keeper dynasty, I would not advise doing that because you're going to get bent over the coals right now just because the value is sky high. And he's not going anywhere. He's going to play second base the rest of the season there, barring any, you know, barring him moving over to a different position if someone else gets hurt or, God forbid, he goes down. But after his injury last year, I kind of rode the hype on him. And after his big Arizona Fall League in 2016, and I traded him in a dynasty format for – it's a saves and holds league. I ended up getting Edwin Encarnacion for him. And I forget the reliever. I want to say it was Dellin Betances. So I'm still okay with that. because I think Encarnacion fits my window for now, and I think I still got another couple years out of Encarnacion with my window being now. But in a few years, that trade might look pretty ugly. But for right now, I think that's a win-win in a dynasty trade. I got him for E5. I mean, what do you think about that?
No, I mean, if you're going to, you know, if you get a championship out of it, it's all forgotten, you know. And I mean, even if you just, you know, get in the money, it's all forgotten because who knows what Gleyber Torres ends up being. And I think what you mentioned, you know, right now is maybe I underestimated the hit tool a little bit. He's not making a ton of contact, so I mean, and it's, you know, he is hitting the ball hard, but
hit tool as far as being able to barrel,
yeah,
put barrel on the bat on the ball.
He's made what he's making is good contact, and
right,
and so and I almost wonder what we've seen a lot this year, but we've seen the last couple years is, you know, these minor league players coming up and just mashing right away. I mean, I don't think really anybody thought Austin Meadows was going to hit for the kind of power that he's hit for coming up. Gleyber Torres hitting for power that I don't think a lot of us, and maybe there is such a big difference between the minor league balls and the major league balls, that we need to start kind of accounting for that a little bit, because there's, you know, I mean, outside of the fact that he's obviously a very good hitter and he's a major league talent, you know, and major league talents are going to go on hot streaks and be good. Like, it doesn't make a ton of sense that he's hitting for the amount of power he is right away.
Do you guys get to minor league games at all? I know a couple of you might.
Yeah.
So like, if you go, like, I mean, like I said, I go to Trenton here. I also go to Lehigh Valley, which is the Phillies AAA affiliate.
Yeah.
There really is a difference when you watch. Like I saw Miguel Sano in his rehab at Lehigh Valley right before he got brought back up. And he had a blast. And the funny thing about it was like a meatball from a AAA reliever. It was a tie game in the ninth, and I think he wanted to go home. And he pretty much just put the home run swing on it. I got to say, the funny thing about it is the ball barely cleared the fence. Now, Lehigh Valley is a pitcher's park, but it just, like when you watch minor league games, you can see when hitters hit the ball doesn't fly the same way. It just doesn't have that same kind of oomph. Whereas when you watch in the majors, you know, that MLB can say all they want about the ball essentially being the same. It's a different, it's just a different experience. So you see guys with, like, you know, these like check swing, like warning track flyouts, and you're like, yeah, it's like apples and oranges.
Yeah, that whole report was just a farce. I mean, it's like,
yeah, that could be. I was gonna say that could be a whole show in and of itself.
I went to Kane County Cougars game. That's the closest game by me. That's low A, Midwest League. So I don't get. It's the Arizona Diamondbacks affiliate, and somehow their team is in the suburbs of Chicago. So I don't get a lot of major league rehab guys coming through there. But I did see Vlad Guerrero and Bo Bichette, and those guys are different quality hitters. And you can just tell the difference with how those guys who've been in major league clubhouses their entire life just prepare a little bit differently. And the ballparks are – that ballpark in particular is a big pitcher's ballpark. But the sounds off the bat of, you know, Guerrero and Bichette sounded different than everybody else. And I think that's just they have that innate ability to put the bat on the ball, which is kind of what Torres is in. Now, that was before, you know, nowadays you don't even have to go see Vlad play because you can see every at-bat on Twitter because everybody has it on there. But I went before it was cool. So
It is. I saw Vlad in person this year. It is great, though, to fantastic. See something like that in person before they make it up, if you can.
Yeah, very good. Very cool. You get up close looks at your for $10 as opposed to, you know, $110.
Yeah, I was at a game in, like, crappy weather in April, and I think there might have been, like, I don't know, 500 people in the park, and
there's
a double A game, and I'm sitting there and, like, right behind home plate because, you know, the ushers didn't care, and yeah, it's great.
I went to a game a couple weeks ago on Thursday, and I saw Royce Lewis playing. It was dollar beers. Dollar beers and dollar hot dogs. I was like, okay, well, shit, this is a nice night out. You know what I mean? So, I mean,
yeah,
can't beat that at a major league ballpark.
I don't know. I'm going to the Giants game tomorrow night for Madison Bumgarner's return. So,
dude, you just drafted that 6'11 pitcher from Kentucky?
Did we? I don't know. Like, I don't care about the Major League Baseball draft. You know, so at least I don't care very much. So let's move on, talk about Greg Allen. Allen was a prospect of some note, you know, maybe about a year and a half ago. I think he profiles more as a fourth outfielder, but getting some run and doing some things with it as of late. There's going to be a logjam in Cleveland in that outfield coming very, very soon. It's actually already starting with Bradley Zimmer coming off of the DL. So, good, Mike, what are your thoughts on Greg Allen and his chances of sticking with the team?
I mean, they're probably not good. I think he had a nail on the head. He's now, I have watched him, and I did pick him up. I think I have him in our ALCBS. I picked him up because I have like a gazillion injuries in that league. He's a good looking player. I do feel like you hear the term second division regular, and that's what he is, just because on a team like the Indians, there's just not going to be a place for him to play. He stole three bases this past week, and that's kind of where the angle is with him. In a really deep league, you kind of hang on to him hoping for, you know, maybe 10 to 15 steals, even if those steals are off the bench. You know, I kind of look at everything else with Allen, and, you know, even when you go back and look at his minor league numbers, there's some batting average there, but it's mostly speed. And that's what the profile is. So even if he somehow manages to eke his way into a platoon or you know, even a somewhat regular job, I just don't see him as more than kind of a speed option for AL only. And, you know, maybe in daily leagues where you can cycle guys in, like maybe a platoon bat in that kind of format.
Matt, what are your thoughts on Greg Allen?
He's pretty, I mean, a lot of what Mike said is spot on. And the thing I liked about Greg Allen, the thing for fantasy that I was most intrigued about with him is the stolen base potential. He's very, very good success rates in the minor leagues, except for his 2015 when he got thrown out 16 times. But he's very, very good. In last year, he was 21 of 23 stealing bases. He's battled some injuries, but again, he could be like a Rajay Davis for the Indians, that kind of player. Fulfilling admirably when guys go down, but I think he's a fourth outfielder, but an above average one. Talked about Harrison Bader kind of playing that similar role. I would much rather have Bader over Allen, but the skill sets are pretty close. So you can, the roles I should say are pretty close. Bader has way more power. Allen's got more speed. So I guess this is a matter of kind of what you're trying to chase after for as far as stolen bases or power on your rosters, but. You know, Allen is a nice alternative for when Bradley Zimmer went down, and now Zimmer's back, and I think Chisenhall's out right now still.
Mm-hmm, but so, he's coming back soon, so is Brandon Guyer coming back soon.
Yeah, I guess playing while he's been fine while he's been hitting. He's been getting a decent run, hitting toward the bottom of the order, but that's not a bad spot because you got Ramirez and Lindor and all them right there, so... Write it out for Greg Allen, but he's not going to be a mainstay in your roster in any stretch. But I mean, we got him for nothing, so continue to write out and get a couple of stolen bases.
Evil Mike, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I echo what you guys said. I think his time is limited. I am intrigued by a couple things he can do from a fantasy perspective, which is, you know, provide some batting average and some stolen bases for us. And, you know, he has been playing since Bradley Zimmer was recalled or, you know, activated from the disabled list. And I mean, to be real, I know you love Zimmer, Justin, and so do I in a lot of various degrees, but he's been garbage this season widely. Yes. So, you know, I mean, maybe he does lose some playing time, Zimmer does, or, you know, maybe he does, maybe he gets set down at some point, who knows, but, you know, for now, I would just hold on to Allen in the format that you would have him in, which is deeper at this point, and see how it shakes out once these guys do return, and if he does kind of carve out a more permanent role for fantasy, then that's awesome. If not, I would expect it not to, then you can just kind of cut bait.
Here's the issue with Greg Allen, and Bradley Zimmer, for that matter, is... these are the only two outfielders on the roster that have options. And so in order for them to you know, send down a Rajay Davis, send down a Melky Cabrera, they got to designate them for assignment, hope they accept the assignments, hope that they're not claimed by another team. And so when both Chisenhall and Guyer come back, and neither of them obviously have any options left either, there's going to be a roster crunch. Now, I think one of Allen and Zimmer has to stay on the team defensively. Because if you're going to play Michael Brantley in left and Lonnie Chisenhall in right, you need someone with range in center. And I think Greg Allen is a pretty good defensive player. I think Bradley Zimmer is a fantastic defensive player. And so I think you probably lean Zimmer in terms of you know, him being the better defensive player. But would it surprise me, as much as I love Bradley Zimmer, to see them send Zimmer down to work on some things, because he obviously has been struggling this year when healthy offensively? No, it wouldn't. So, you know, maybe in your deeper formats, if you've been rostering Greg Allen, you hold on to him and see if when that roster crunch comes, if the team decides that maybe Zimmer needs some more time. But I don't think there is a huge long-term market for this guy in fantasy, because, like I said, I think he profiles mostly as a fourth outfielder. All right, let's go ahead and move on and talk about Mike Foltynewicz. And when we talk about mediocre Mikes, we always throw it to Evil Mike.
I don't think that that's been a thing ever. I think this is the inaugural.
It is now.
So, you know, Mike Foltynewicz, I mean, I'll look it up on the ESPN Player Rater, but I would assume he's somewhere in the vicinity of like a top 30 starter right now. I'm not going to look for
him.
Oh, he's top 18. So he's a top 18 starter right now. I would, you know, I think I wrote this in the Roto write-up the other day. I think he's going to be like a top 50-ish guy the rest of the season. Maybe I'm, you know, shortchanging him a bit, but I always go conservative on guys instead of higher. So, you know, right now his expected ERA on Baseball HQ is at 3.62, so, you know, about a run and a half higher than what it is right now at 2.22. I don't love his arsenal, and I never have. And while I love his velocity, and I've always been kind of intrigued with him on that front, you know, it's kind of notorious you don't like righties in SunTrust Park, because, you know, he has been bad against lefties for his career. You know, 284 batting average against left-handed batters. That equates to an 846 OPS. I do think that kind of catches up with him as the season goes on. 673 OPS against lefties thus far. I'm sure some of that's kind of fueled by, you know, being away from SunTrust at points. But, you know, his first pitch strike rate is pretty much the same as it was last year. 10% swinging strike rate is pretty much the same as it was last year. But his main arsenal is, you know, fastball, sinker, slider. He does mix in a changeup a little bit in the curveball. But for the most part, he's getting his whiffs on the slider and, you know, the fastball. And I'm not in love with that. So the strikeout rate, I think, does go down to, you know, his career rate is 8.5 strikeouts per nine. Right now it's at 10.4. I think that goes down a bit. You know, I'm pretty much widely saying that, you know, he's going to regress a bit as the season goes on. Doesn't make him a, you know, an asset that you can't use. Again, I think he's probably a top 50-ish starter when it's all said and done. But I don't buy that he is this good. And I don't think really anybody does at this point either. But I just think that we're going to see some regression. So I would sell if I could, but I also wouldn't shortchange him either. If somebody's trying to just give you garbage because, you know, they think that he's going to regress in a, like, massive way, then I wouldn't do that. I mean, he's going to be a serviceable guy the rest of the season. I just don't think he's going to be this good.
Well, he's been very good so far, and when we talk about good mics, we throw it to good Mike. So, Mike, what are your thoughts on Mike Foltynewicz?
I'm a little bit higher on him. Although I do agree with most of those points. I think what concerns me a little bit about him, it's always a fine line with Foltynewicz with the control and the command. And as good as his results have been, the walk rate is up, and that's kind of where he's gotten into a danger zone in the past. You know, the thing where I think the strikeouts could still be a career high, even though he's not going to strike out 10.5 batters per nine, is the fastball ball velocity is up. You know, and watching Folty, you've seen it. Like, hitters are having a harder time making contact against him than they have in the past. I believe and I got to go look here, but I believe the swinging strikeout rate is... Yeah, it's funny because the swing and strike is about the same, which is kind of weird because, you know, just watching him, you know, pitch, particularly with two strikes, he seems to have a little bit more of a finishing touch than he's had in the past. But all that being said, I do agree with, you know, Mike's contention there. It does seem that, you know, a 3.5 the rest of the way is a more realistic expectation. I think there have been some gains for Foltynewicz. And, you know, his DRA, you know, Baseball Prospectus's expected metric is a 3.22, which is, you know, certainly better than some of the other metrics, like whether it's xFIP or what you're looking at. But it does speak to a pitcher who's obviously not going to put up a, you know, an ERA close to 2 the rest of the way.
Matt, what are your thoughts on Foltynewicz? You went to high school with the dude.
Yeah, I did. He's been outstanding this season. Can't really complain about anything. His strikeouts are up. The walks are even slightly up, and he's still been great. He's getting lucky with the left on base percentage. Home over fly ball has been in his favor a lot. I'm not sure if it's for real or not, or if this even matters, but he looks like he scrapped the curveball a little bit, cut the usage down significantly according to the last year, kind of throwing more changeups and more sliders instead, keeping the strong, heavy fastball rate, 60% fastball this year. It's a very simple recipe for him if he's got the command, which he's actually had this year. He's had about 40 grade command in the past, and now it's at least up to average, despite the high walk rate still. But he's not missing, out of the in the zone as much anymore. That was his problem. Bad pitches he would leave up or leave out over the plate. He wasn't able to go deep in games ever. He was a five and fly kind of guy. Last two games have been phenomenal. 7 innings against the Red Sox and his 9 inning complete game against the Nationals. Near no hitter, I believe, too. And it's been impressive watching him pitch. And I am very skeptical on him for the future outlook of this season. I always kind of tagged him as a bullpen guy because I didn't think the command was good enough, and I didn't think his fastball slider combination was enough, but he's incorporating the changeup more now, and he's throwing some strikes and he's getting lefties out. So I'm about ready to take the L on this one. Hopefully I do, because it's always good when someone from your high school does well. And yeah, it was a funny story when Fulton Evich was in the Astros system, he'd play basketball with us in the summer, in the wintertime. Play basketball with us and stuff when we were out a couple years back when we were coming home from college and stuff. And he's a couple years younger, but he'd play basketball and then got traded to the Braves and they stopped all that. So he couldn't play with us anymore. And rightly so. I mean, you got to protect your assets, but he's been great this year.
Vlad Sedler from Guru Elite tweeted on Friday morning that he very oddly had a very vivid dream of Mike Fulton Evich pitching a no-hitter. And that night he went out and threw a two-hitter.
Yeah. Yep.
Wow.
So I've been texting Vlad every morning asking him what he dreamt about, which I'm sure he's really enjoying at this point. This has been going on for, 4 straight days. But I need to get paid, so.
Creepy. You're a creepy asshole.
This is why you shouldn't give me your cell phone number. But anyways, I buy there have been gains. The slider has looked a lot better this year, which has been a real improvement for him and a really valuable pitch. He's been throwing it more, so it's definitely helping. There are some warning signs. One, the home run rate. So far, he's pretty much cut his home run rate in half, and I just can't imagine that in being a right-handed pitcher in that ballpark in SunTrust, that he's going to be able to keep the ball in the yard as often as he's been doing this year. The walk rate still concerns me, almost 4 walks per 9. He's getting lucky, BABIP-wise, getting lucky in his strand rate. There are some warning signs, and so I think there's some massive regression coming. Does that mean he can't be a very valuable pitcher? No, I think he can. The underlying metrics have supported some of what he's doing. I just think it's gonna come back to earth pretty heavily. And so, if someone else in your league is completely buying this, then I wouldn't mind selling him, even if it's not for top dollar right now.
One big thing with Fulton Evich too, I don't know if this matters. Some of the old school baseball people will always complain about this, but his mound presence, his mannerisms on the mound are garbage. Like, he's the kind of guy, he gets squeezed on a call, in his opinion, and he will, do everything short of run up to the umpire and scream in his face. Like, he will sit there, swear, drop the shoulders, snap the glove when he catches the ball. Little things like that. If you watch Fulton Evich pitch with your grandpa probably will not like him very much. Just because he's against everything they always tell you when you're young. That's been his problem since he was, 10 years old. And that hasn't changed.
I like how Matt has middle school grades on a lot of these guys. So. Let's talk about another guy who's been pitching really well as of late. Ross Stripling has been defying expectations, and the Dodgers really need him because they called me to see if I could pitch in their rotation, and I wasn't interested because I just can't afford to get hurt in the same way everybody else on their team is. But he's been very good as of late. So, good, Mike. What are your thoughts so far on Ross Stripling?
You know, we remember Stripling. You know, it's funny. You know, he had that no hitter where he was pulled, and you know, it was a really big deal, and people were upset about that at the time
against the Giants.
Yeah, and you know, 2 years later, like that's just. I don't think that would have been the same issue. Like, I think people now. That's almost the norm, like unless you're a horse like a Max Scherzer, it's kind of the norm that if you get to 100, 110 pitches, you're just not going to be able to complete the game. I like Stripling. You know, he's not going to keep up this level just because no pitcher can keep up this level, but he's just kind of a solid citizen. Like he looks to me like he has the potential, regardless of the role, to be whether it's like a mid-tier starter or like a solid setup reliever. It, you know, it looks like now he's going to start, obviously, with all the injuries in the Dodgers rotation. I don't necessarily see him striking out 11 batters per nine, but I can certainly see him striking out like eight and a half, you know, putting up like a solid like 3.3, 3.4 ERA. I really like everything in the profile with him in terms of the type of pitcher he is. You know, the mechanics look pretty clean to me. He doesn't necessarily have an overwhelming pitch, but he throws four pitches, you know, I'd say above average at least, you know, if not better. And there's just no reason to think that he can't continue being a solid asset in anything, but, you know, unless it's a really shallow format.
Mike, or Evil Mike, no, I'm forgetting which one you are. What are your thoughts on Stripling?
The biggest pro of all of this with Stripling is that he is pretty much guaranteed to stay in the rotation for a while. And, you know, more than likely you picked him up off waivers and you've kind of rode the hot streak here. And, you know, five starts into May, I mean, he gave up four earned runs in five starts. I mean, that's really, really good. Like, you know, to Mike's sentiment, like, no, he's not that good. But he has put up pretty, you know, last year he put up a 12% swinging strike rate. You know, since he started, you know, this last month here or whatever, he had an 11% swinging strike rate. He does offer a good variation of pitches. And, you know, he's always been a guy that's kept the ball on the ground. Doesn't give up a lot of home runs. So, you know, not an overwhelming guy up there. You know, he has like a 92 mile an hour fastball, but at the same time, he has a really good arsenal. The curveball has been good this last month. The changeup he brought back to a higher usage rate than all of last season. Over his last, you know, five starts or so, he's used it 11% of the time. And, you know, last year he didn't use it anywhere near that amount. So, you know, a really good kind of mix of pitches to keep lefties and righties off balance a bit. And again, he's going to start for a while, in my opinion. So I'm riding, you know, Ross Stripling for a while. I think that he can end up being a really useful piece. No, he's not this good, and no, he might not be, you know, somebody that you're relying on, but I think that he's gonna be a really nice addition to anybody's team, or, you know, has been to this point and will probably continue to be a really solid guy the rest of the season.
Matt, what are your thoughts on Stripling?
Since we're following its draft day and all, I like Stripling when he came out of Texas A&M. Him and Michael Wacha were the front end of a really good rotation for the Aggies, but I liked his curveball then. Glad to see it's making a comeback, according to what Mike said. And he was a guy I always kind of liked a little bit as a swing man. I always thought he was a little bit better than that. Then, but for the Dodgers last year, he kind of, you know, he was turned into an everything guy, worked in whatever situation they needed him. And this year he's doing the same, and it's been outstanding stuff. Obviously, he's not going to keep this up, but the strikeout totals have been damn near elite from him this last three or four starts. And he's not obviously not going to keep it up, but there's no reason to get rid of him because I still think with all the injuries in that rotation, he is going to. I wouldn't be actively selling him just because I think he's going to be in that rotation for a while, and he's earned the spot now. That team will manipulate the DL when they're not having to use it for legit injuries, like I think they are now. When everyone comes back, if they do come back, they will mix and match guys and put guys on the DL, skip a start or two, but I don't see Stripling being a guy that they'll mess with too much because he's an extremely rubber arm kind of guy. I don't know how he gets all the strikeouts he gets. I wish I had a better answer for you, but he's a fun guy to watch pitch because he works in and out, up and down, and tall quadrants and everything like that. It keeps hitters off balance, but it's he's a fun guy to watch. He's kind of comparable for me right now with how he's going to like a Miles Michaelis a little bit in the way that he's just throwing a lot of strikes, keeping the ball in the yard, and getting ground balls.
Well, and I was going to say, I was going to compare him to a former Cardinals pitcher. I mean, he's different, one, because he's, you know, Stripling's right-handed and Marco Gonzalez is left-handed.
Change-up guys, yeah.
But, well, no, a guy who has got – he's a bad fastball guy. Both these guys are bad fastball guys. But they, you know, Stripling has two above-average pitches, and he's kind of a kitchen sink guy, which helps keep the batter off balance. You don't know what he's going to throw. And he's done a really good job with sequencing this year in pitch selection. And having Yasmani Grandal behind the plate really helps a guy like Ross Stripling, because he steals strikes for him, and he calls a really good game. And there's obviously regression coming, but maybe I didn't give him as much credit when he kind of started this hot streak as maybe I should have, because I kind of thought about the guy I saw when he came up for a 74-inning stretch last year and was largely unimpressive. Obviously, the home run rate's going to come sure. up. The strand rate is going to come down. But I think this is a guy who can probably be a mid-3 ERA guy rest the way with 9 strikeouts per 9, and that's nothing to sneeze at. Now, that's obviously a far cry in a way what he's comparatively speaking to what he's been doing, but that's still a pretty good pitcher in this.
He could be J-Hap National League, and I think a lot of what maybe you know buys into shipping success is he's tightened up the velocity range on his pitches. I mean, he's 92, and the slowest pitch is but almost 82 miles an hour. It's not a very big window, so maybe it's a lot of deception keeping guys off balance, truly, because he could throw all 4 pitches for strikes. And, you know, before it was his range was the curveball was down to 78, and I know it's only 3 miles an hour or so, but that might matter. He's tightened up the velocity band, and it's been good.
Let's talk about Frankie Montas, who's had a pretty interesting start to the year, former top prospect. 2 starts in, 14 innings pitched, a .64 ERA so far. Matt, what are your thoughts on Montas so far?
Hard thrower. At least he was back in his prospect days when he bounced around to about
different teams.
Yeah, he's with the White Sox.
Still throwing 96.
Red Sox, the Dodgers, and now he's here in Oakland. He's still throwing hard. So he's kind of Mike Fultonevich in a way, because he always had troubles with the command, and lefties torched him. He was kind of ticketed for the bullpen, kind of like repeat like what I said about Fultonevich, but he's been phenomenal this year. I think he's less likely to keep it up. Just ride it while you got it, man. He threw 67 of his 99 pitches for strikes in his last start, which is extremely non-Frankie Montas-like. and if he can keep that up, he's going to have success. I just don't buy it. So. Ride him out. First sign of trouble, cut him, because he'll do more harm than good.
Good, Mike. What are your thoughts on Montas?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I know what the ERA looks like, and, you know, even the FIP is good, but he still profiles to me as a – this is where I believe the scouts. He still profiles to me as a future bullpen arm. I still wonder about the durability and if he is – they are going to keep him as a starter. The fastball's great, the slider's really good, but it's also that profile where without that third pitch or the consistency of a third pitch, I just don't really see him holding up as a starter. You know, it's kind of that funny thing, like even for fantasy, like the strikeouts just aren't quite there, or they haven't been in his, you know, 2 starts in the majors. So, yeah, I don't have a problem with going with him and playing the matchups, especially in deeper leagues. Especially if he's got a good park, you know, going with him. But if you have him, you're really just kind of, you know, playing with found money. This isn't something to me that you're looking at a long term trend.
Mike or Evil Mike, what are your thoughts?
I mean, to his credit, since he went to the Dodgers in 2016, like we have seen a dip in his walks per 9. You know, I'll admit I really haven't researched Frankie Montas in a couple years now, because I just have kind of found him irrelevant to this point in terms of like our fantasy game right now. But, you know, based on his repertoire, you know, what you guys say is right. Like, pretty much a 2-pitch guy. right now, I think that he's just kind of going to throw it over the plate and hope to get weak contact, which is what has happened over a couple of games. But, you know, long term, especially for what we need in fantasy, he doesn't really offer much. You know, 8%, he's gotten 7 swinging strikes in both of the games that he started thus far. And he also, throughout the last couple of years, has been a mix and match guy. Sometimes he's in the bullpen, sometimes he's starting. He hasn't had 20 or even double digit starts in the minor league since 2015. So even if you're looking at it from purely a, you know, durability standpoint, this is a guy that really hasn't started a lot of games in the minors the last couple of years. So even if you are trying to find a piece that's going to really kind of propel you in AL only leagues, I don't think you get more than, you know, 10 to 12 starts from him potentially. And maybe it's more, and, you know, maybe I'm shortchanging this guy as well, but I ultimately, the strikeouts aren't going to be there. His walks are always going to be a concern for me, and his arsenal just really doesn't present a lot upside. I think that he's going to be like a middle relief option long term, not even somebody that's going to set up for like closes or ability to close games at any point either. So I'm not really that enticed by him.
I think he's one of those guys that is perfect to stream against poor competition, and so far that's a little bit of what he's played. I sat down and watched every pitch from the Arizona game right after the start, because I was really excited, because this is a guy who's, like I said, a former top prospect. He is the poster child for when you're trying to explain the difference between control and command, because he was in the zone a lot, but he rarely actually hit the glove. It was extremely effectively wild throughout the entire outing. Similar stuff in the Kansas City game. I mean, you know, the one red flag for me is dude threw 8 innings and had 2 strikeouts on a guy who's supposed to be, you know, a power pitcher. And it was, you know, a lot of ground ball contact that was, you know, eaten up by the defense, which is surprising considering they've got Marcus Semien at shortstop and Jed Lowrie at second base. So I know Matt Chapman has really, you know, been a really nice defensive addition to that team, but the A's are not known as a strong defensive team unless that's changed without me realizing it. So he's got another matchup against Kansas City coming up. And I think he's got a matchup against Houston. So you obviously can't start him against Houston, but with Daniel Gossett going and getting an MRI today on a bulky elbow, them already dealing with injuries in that rotation, I think in deeper formats you can continue to roster Montas, because I think his rotation spot seems pretty safe right now. This isn't a team necessarily that's going to go out and buy a big name starting pitcher to replace people in their rotation at the deadline. So you just got to, I think, be careful about when and where you start him.
No, they're just going to draft college quarterbacks in the first round and let them play football.
Sounds like a smart idea.
I don't understand that, but that's for a different podcast.
Matt, they don't care. Stop.
Yeah.
Let's move on, talking about Fernando Romero, who's kind of a darling of the fantasy industry here for a little bit, then got absolutely shelled the other day. So let's go to Evil Mike this time. What are your thoughts so far on Fernando Romero?
Yeah, it's interesting. So the last couple, like, what was it, maybe a week or 2 weeks ago, I was, you know, I've watched him multiple times at this point, but I looked on Brooks Baseball to like try and see his pitch usages, and they don't have him up there. So I can't even look at his pitch usages, but like, ultimately, whenever I watch him, I've just have not been excited. There's just something about it. The movement on his stuff, I'm not really impressed by. His, you know, first pitch strike rate is, you know, 54%, and I can see that when watching the games. He just rarely gets ahead in counts. And I like the velocity, and you know, I like the fact that he probably has a pretty safe rotation spot right now. But you know, for the season, for the rest of the way, you know, I think that we're going to see a lot of the same, which is inconsistency. When you look at you know, we have at Baseball HQ, you know, PQS outings, which is kind of pretty much a rating system scale of 1 to 5 of how you did each start. And, you know, he has like a 30%, you know, dominant outings and 30% disaster outings, and then everything else is kind of right in the middle. And I think that's what you can expect the rest of the way. You know, you might have some starts where, you know, you can stream him if you're in a shallow format and he does well, and then you might have others where he just has a completely disaster outing because, you know, he again is a young, inconsistent pitcher at this point. But pretty good ground ball rate, you know, 52% at this point in time is really good. And you know, the home run rate has been solid thus far. He's been able to generate some strikes strikeouts with an 11% swinging strike rate. But the arsenal, I'm not impressed by. I also am not impressed with his mechanics. I'm not really impressed with him being able to get, you know, consistent. I think that the walk rate is going to be a consistent problem with him as well. So overall, not that impressed or excited about him. But he is going to be somebody that I think is going to log a good amount of innings this year.
Matt, what are your thoughts on Romero?
I echo a lot of what Mike said. He's going to be prone to the blow-up outing because his stuff's not as crisp as it should be. But I'm going to add on another sign of concern also for anyone in Fantasy League. He's a Tommy John survivor, so he's coming back from that. I believe he had that in 20. He missed the entire 2015 season. His career high innings pitched was last year at 125. He's already at, between AAA and the majors this year, about 51. So you have to think they're not going to let him go too much past that 125. So that's my concern there. He needs the third pitch. The changeup needs to take a step forward. It's a fastball slider guy, and he cannot pinpoint it yet. He's just kind of more of a thrower than a pitcher at this stage in his career. I think he'll be ultimately a very solid, you know, number three starter, probably number four for fantasy, but that's not yet. Last season also, his season was cut short with a shoulder impingement, so there's another arm concern. So I would let Romero string together maybe another decent start or two. If he does, I would try to trade him for whatever I can get. You didn't pay anything for him preseason, so if you can't find a trade partner, you just drop him after he's been terrible, but I'm not optimistic about him this year.
Good, Mike. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, he shows flashes. Like, there's times where Romero will, you know, jack that fastball up to like 97 and it's got movement, and the same thing with the slider. But yeah, he's really more of a work in progress who shows flashes of brilliance than he is a complete pitcher. And, you know, I think his debut is what sucked people in, because in that debut, no one had seen him yet. And, you know, he was, you know, when you're throwing pitches with movement and when you're hitting in the mid to upper 90s fairly consistently with your fastball, you know, even seasoned analysts are like, oh, my God, like, I can't believe what I'm seeing. Like, this is great. You know, as opposed to a guy like Stripling, who we just talked about, where, you know, he's only hitting like 91, 92, and you're like, yeah, you know, that's okay. But, you know, Romero's like throwing a harder fastball. But, you know, I agree with Matt and Mike, which you need to be a pitcher. You can't just be, you know, somebody who's hitting velocity and who's got like a strong slider and nothing else. You know, my other concern about Romero from a fantasy perspective, because he throws so many balls, because of the lack of consistency, for as good as he's been up until his last outing, I believe he has like one quality start. If you're in a league with that kind of format, like, that kind of hurts a little bit. Like, you hate to have a pitcher, no matter how well he's doing, where you know he's only going to go five, maybe five and a third, you're going to lose out on that. So I do like Romero long term. But yeah, for this year, he was probably overhyped when he first came up. And, you know, he's probably more of a four for this year, and really AL only guy, deep mixed, and not somebody in a standard mix I'd look at as more of, or I'd look at him as more of just a matchup play, and have to be a really favorable matchup play for me to use him there.
Yeah, I'm fairly on board with that. I do like him a bit long term. And one of the things I like too is, for a guy who is mainly characterized as a two pitch pitcher, and while the changeup isn't great or anything, I think it's adequate, and he throws it enough to kind of show it. So I think he's a guy that will develop more and more over time. This year in fantasy, I'm not the biggest of fan, because I think there are going to be those blow-up outings, and it's not like you would have avoided that outing against Kansas City. You were probably pretty stoked when you slotted him in your lineup that day. So it's just going to kind of come and go depending on how hittable he is. His velocity was down a little bit in that outing too, so I'll be interested to see where his velocity is in this next outing, considering of the Tommy John history. All right, we're gonna cut it right there, because me and Good Mike have a second podcast to record after this for the Fantasy Baseball Invitational podcast. But Good Mike, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, it was great. I'd be glad to do this again. And just to let your listeners know, I was a little late because I got mixed up on this podcast and and the other one. So I do apologize, because I think we had one more player we're going to talk about. But It is getting late here on the East Coast.
And we're already over an hour in, so it's
all late early. Getting late early.
Mike, why don't you remind people where you can reach on social media and then plug all your work over at BP?
So it's Mike Gianella on Twitter, and that's G-I-A-N-E-L-L-A, and it's all one word. And at Baseball Prospectus, I just came out with the second edition of my in-season valuations. We actually put together updated rankings this year, which is something we've been trying to do at all the positions, and then I cap that off with our top 300. And every week I also do the Fab reviews for both Tout Wars and Labor, along with my colleague Zach Steinhorn. So a lot going on there at BP.
Matt, what are you working on? Where can you be reached?
Just finished my top 300 for Fantasy Baseball Prospects. I wanted to get one out before the draft, and I barely beat that deadline that I put on myself. I got it out last night. I'm going to try to make a better post with better formatting and all that stuff. I just don't have the time. I'm going to do that, though. I will hopefully have that up in a few days. But yeah,
I'll get it formatted tonight for you, and then you can post it tomorrow.
Roger that. I'm not creative, so
it won't be. It won't be creative either.
However you want to do it, man, is all good with me. So check that out. And that's about it.
Mike, what are you working on?
Yeah, good, Mike. Always great having you on, despite the name that I get called the whole show. It's okay. I'm happy you came on. But you can check me out on Twitter, at Mike Werner, FWFB. I do a couple articles for Fangraphs every week, the Roto Write-Up and the Bullpen Report. I also do the Daily Matchups column on Baseball HQ on Mondays. So, yeah.
And then you can reach me on Twitter, at Justin Mason, FWFB. You can email me or the show, friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com. You can read all my work over at Fangraphs, where I write anywhere between 4 and 6 times a week. At Fantasy Alarm, where I write about 5 to 6 times a week. Friends of Fantasy Benefits, Fan Tracks. You can hear me on the Sleeper and the Bust and the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational podcast, as well as all the Friends of Fantasy Benefits podcasts that I do for baseball and football. And then again on the Tout Wars Hour on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network on Sundays from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And I think that's about it. So that is going to wrap us up. For Good Mike, Evil Mike, Matt, and myself, thank you for listening. A fantastic baseball season.